Hi, this is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. Welcome to Recovery Chronicles. This is a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. Our very special guest today is Josh Barros, and he is from Bismarck, age 30, married with children. His drug of choice is, or was, alcohol. He's been sober right now for between 5 and 6 months. He has had longer periods of sobriety before this one. And we want to just thank you, Josh, for being on the program, having the courage to share your story. Why did you decide to come on and share your story?
Well, truthfully, Tom, I guess the reason why I decided to come and share my story is because I kind of want to be the maybe guiding light for other people, so they can maybe even say, hey, that guy kind of got up there and did it. So I'm naturally kind of shy by nature, you know, and I like to stick myself out of my comfort zone a little bit. And this is way outside of my comfort zone, but we'll have fun.
Well, this half hour usually goes pretty darn quickly. That's what I tell people. Tell us a little bit about your growing up years.
As a child, I mean, grew up with two parents. My mom, dad both loved my brother and I very much. You know, there's different dynamics in each family. You know, you see things through your eyes. They might not necessarily be correct, but, you know, it is the way you kind of pattern your life after the way you view it. I know my parents, you know, wanted nothing but the best for us, you know, always want to succeed in life, go to college, which we did, both my brother and I did. So I can say I came from a very happy family. I mean, had a couple dogs, you know. Mm-hmm. Go out hunting, you know, fishing. You know, dad take care of us. Mom's always making food.
Yeah. So how and when were you introduced to alcohol?
Well, I was probably introduced to alcohol. Well, obviously, I'm going to be saying this on live radio here, which mom and dad probably didn't know this, but I remember being really young, you know, and actually trying some blackberry brandy that I found way up in the medicine cabinet, so to speak, you know, and I was curious about this. You know, I didn't know what it was at the time. You know, I didn't know what Brandy was. I knew there was a girl in my school named Brandy. So I was like, well, this must be kind of interesting. She's kind of cute. So this must be pretty good. And I ended up trying a little bit. And honestly, I wasn't my favorite. You know, there's a little bit of tang. It was kind of burnt when I went down. But then again, I was like, hey, that was kind of interesting. You know, it perked curiosity.
How old were you, did you say?
I was probably about maybe 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And then, but I immediately thought, you know, this is a wrong event. This is a wrong thing to do. You know, mom and dad just always say this, like, adult beverages, you know, and I'm nowhere near to being an adult, you know, I'm about 8 or 9. And so I quickly put it out of my brain because I was actually really scared to get in trouble. So I just, you know, didn't really have anything to do ever since then.
So sooner or later, somewhere along the line, alcohol became your friend, you know. I mean, certainly after a while it turned on you, friend. But how, you know, tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, that process actually didn't happen until I was quite a bit older. I'd have to say it's definitely in college. I started working at a bar, and working at the bar was no problem. I mean, I had a lot of patrons come in there, you know, they would drink, and we'd get to know each other. And, you know, occasionally I'd have a beer, but I always made it a goal of mine not to drink while I was working because I didn't want to. I've had that instance, you know, where I'd go to a bar, you know, and you get that bartender doing shots, you know, and you're like trying to talk to him and ask him, you know, what's the drink special, and they can't really tell you, and it's kind of an awkward moment. So I never wanted it to be like that. But there again, you know, I mean, I probably ended up getting a little more stressed out with college than, I mean, maybe the average person. And then I kind of found out that it was something that kind of helped me kind of relieve some of my stress, you know. You know, get a little drink before a night type thing with that, you know, and that was probably the moment that it kind of turned on me because I actually started using it for more kind of a self-soothing medicinal sort of purpose, you know, and, you know, you have all these, you know, rational thoughts in your mind and you tell yourself, oh, it's okay, you know, it's fine, you know, just one more drink here, you know, or I remember one day, it was a Saturday, and I had nothing in my fridge for food-wise because, you know, I was a college kid living in an apartment, and I worked, made money, but I just didn't go shopping. And I was really thirsty. I didn't want to drink water because water's free, and that's probably something healthy for you, but I didn't want to drink it. So I actually looked at my fridge, and being a college kid and have nothing but beer in my fridge, I decided, hey, I'm going to drink my beer like it's pop, you know, have a science experiment, you know, which science experiments didn't really run that well, maybe because it wasn't the best beer because it was all I could afford. But at the same time, I thought to myself, this is probably just not a good idea.
Yeah.
But then I still had the nagging thought of, hey, okay, why not, right? You know, just live in Rome. You know, you feel good. You know, you'll relax a little bit. You know, you'll fall asleep. It'll be good. And at that moment, you know, actually, it was probably a really defining moment of mine where I really thought to myself, could I have a problem? But being a young person, I thought, nope. Because in my mind, alcoholics, you know, are old men. They're old men in their like 60s, 70s, you know, 80s, you know. Those are the people that are having the problem, you know. Those are the ones that you're like, oh, I wish, you know, Uncle Ed doesn't come to, you know, the family reunion because that's all he does is drink, you know. Never once thought, you know, I could be susceptible to this, you know. You know, did it occur to my thought process and in my mind? Yeah, it did. But it quickly, as soon as it went in, it went out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when's the first time you really got into trouble because of alcohol, legal or otherwise?
Well, good thing with me is nothing legal. You know, by the grace of God alone, did I not get any legal problems. Probably the honest, I'd have to say probably the one time that I really got in trouble was, you know, I was at a, it was actually on Easter of all things. And, you know, I decided to dip into the whiskey a little bit. Probably a little bit harder than I should have, you know, and then I'll go to my in-laws' house and I made a complete jerk of myself. I mean, it was embarrassing, you know. I'm glad I don't really remember all my actions and things I've said, but, you know, I saw the look on my wife's face, you know, and I was so adamant that night, I got to go pick up my truck. And she goes, no, you're no condition to drive. You can't go grab your truck. And I'm like, no, I need my truck. I got to go to work the next day and I'll drop you off, you know. And I remember waking up later that night, it's probably about 3-4 o'clock in the morning, thinking, oh, what did I do? Like, you know, and it was a very, very shocking moment about what I did. And, you know, my father-in-law, you know, he's been in parole and probation for, I think it was like 23, 24, 25 some years. And, you know, great guy. And of course, naturally as a father, and also as someone that's been in this field, been, you know, seeing individuals with this, you know, he quickly had a conversation with my wife. And I mean, what they talked about, it wasn't really disclosed to me because I guess maybe nothing my business. But at the same time, you know, he was very concerned. And my wife, you know, said I should probably issue an apology. And I remember sitting in my apartment, actually in my kitchen, and I had to come to terms, you know, with what I did and why I did it, you know. And I had all these thoughts rushing through my head of, you know, like, oh, what should I tell them? You know, I'll just tell them that, you know, it was an accident. I'm sorry, you know, or, oh, you know, it was the first time, you know, for this and all forgiveness, hugs and kisses, everything goodbye, you know. But something pressed inside me that said, you should probably seriously tell them the truth. So tell them what you think and what's going on. And that's when I ended up texting, pretty long text, and just said, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm an alcoholic, you know. I mean, you know, I have relatives that are, it runs my family, both sides of my family, you know, and I can't excuse my actions. You know, they are mine. I must own up to them. So whatever I've said, if it's wrong, you know, or if it was right, I mean, so unfortunately, I think, you know, when you do take some alcoholic drinks, you know, you tend to let loose and kind of tell people, you know, the truth, but you don't do it in a more filtered way. It's just the raw truth. And actually, it can be a very harmful way of, you know, explaining yourself and expressing yourself. So immediately I was feeling a lot of shame in that moment. And, you know, by the text messages I got back were nothing but of love, you know, of, you know, we are concerned about you, and you know, there are ground rules, you know, in my house you will not be drinking, you know, and you know, when you're around, if you see you drinking, you know, why don't you around your kids and things like that, and that kind of scared me for a little bit. So then that's when I first went to a first support meeting. My wife said, you know, you need to do something, you know, we got to figure something out, you know, and you know. My father-in-law encouraged me to go into some sort of outpatient treatment program, you know, if at all. And I kind of said no. Mm-hmm. I let kind of life's distractions get in the way because, you know, I'm the breadwinner of my family. You know, I have to, you know, pay the bills. Mm. I work, you sure. know, and that's, and, you know, it, honestly, I was kind of scared of actually going to some sort of outpatient therapy.
Mm-hmm. How long ago was this? How old were you?
This was about 2 years ago.
Okay. All right.
And it was 2 years ago, about 28. And I remember kind of telling myself that, you know what, people that go to inpatient or outpatient are people that are really, really far down the drain to the fact that, you know, they're probably not going to climb back out. Mm-hmm. I'm not there.
Yeah.
You know, this is a one isolated incident and it's not ever going to happen again. I made a promise to myself. I made a promise to my wife. It's not going to happen again. Man of my word, you know.
Sure, sure. Like
laws of the Medes and Persians, you know.
And let me interject, in comparison to others, you know, you have not had a long drinking career. You've heard that phrase, but that is not to minimize the problem that you had. And kudos to you for recognizing your problem really so soon in its progression.
And I thank you for that. That's a great comment you make, you know, and I really appreciate that. That just kind of warmed the cockles of my heart, so to speak. And it's true, you know, I haven't had a long drink career because, you know, again, in my mind at the time, I'm thinking, you know, alcoholics are their 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, that's, you know, they're the people that, you know, been drinking for like 40 some years. You know, I don't drink 40. You know, it's very rare that I have a beer. It's very rare that I drink, period.
Yes.
But the thing I noticed about myself is that, you know, and my lovely wife brought this to my attention is that, you know, you don't just have one. You have one that goes to two, then that goes to three, then all of a sudden within like an hour and a half span, you've had like 9 beers. You know, mm-hmm. who drinks 9 beers yeah. in an hour and a half?
And does she say that your personality changes or your mood changes or is it just the decision-making that changes?
It's just a decision-making that changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we don't really talk about like mood or anything like that, you know. I'm pretty sure that definitely did change. Mm-hmm. You know, probably got a little more emotional, a little more unkept, so to speak. I mean, this is something I did realize, you know, speaking of emotions, is I never really deal with them at all. And through this recovery program, you know, especially, you know, I did outpatient in Heartview, and that's how I met, you know, started my true recovery, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I learned how to deal with is, you know, you have emotions, you can deal with them, you know, mm-hmm. it's important, yeah. you know.
You picked up some tools.
A lot of tools.
Yeah.
A lot of tools. Mm-hmm. I mean.
As you think about dealing with your emotions, give us an example.
Well.
I know I'm putting you on the spot, but you just said that previous to your picking up some tools or learning how to handle emotions, you hid them and you didn't know how, you know, what to do with them.
So let's just take, you know, a disappointment in general. Mm-hmm. So something wouldn't go my way. You know, I made every single plan, you know, business-wise, made every single plan for everything to succeed, you know, and something outside of my control happened and it didn't go my way. Normally, I'd be very frustrated and angry, but I wouldn't talk about it. I wouldn't, you know, let my wife know what was, you know, frustrating me because I have a very caring, loving wife, you know, who's always like, I see you're having an issue, you know, like, talk to me, you know, what's going on? And I would always be drawn in like nothing. You know, my problems are my problems, you know, their work problems, you know, because I've always made it a point, you know, to cut work and family life separate, you know. I don't want to bring work drama, and it's the same, I don't want to bring family drama to work, you know. There are fine mm-hmm. lines and things. So beforehand, I would just be drawn in, let it all build up, be frustrated, and then as a manager, I'd get, you know, really, really frustrated with my staff, talk to my staff and tell them why I'm frustrated or angry. Mm-hmm. I would just be like, you guys can't do your job. I can't believe.
Right. You know,
negative right. things like that. Well, now, post that, I'll actually take time to think about what, you know, my actions and the actions that I've done to actually may have helped, you know, expedite things not going in my favor, you know, but also I'm fine to talk about it now. I'm saying, you know, I'm frustrated with this, you know, I'm not understanding why this happened, but, you know, and I'll seek guidance, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe because I was taking too much pressure upon myself and now I don't, you know, my wife will always say, you never give yourself enough grace, you know, mm-hmm. you know, you don't allow yourself to mess up. Honestly, because I've always been scared of failure. I've yeah. always been scared of messing up.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lesson to be learned there, I think. And one of my favorite sayings is they don't call it talk therapy for nothing. You know, and as an addiction counselor, You know, I often explain you need at least one significant other to talk to. I mean, whether that's a counselor, your wife, mom, dad, brother, sister, but I mean, we all need a confessor. Mm-hmm. And some of us are so reluctant to do that. It's probably more of a male trait, probably, than a, you know, I think BFFs, you know, girlfriends, I think, share almost everything. If you've ever listened to women talk with each other, but I think that there's a lesson to be learned there. You know, when you get home and you're feeling bad, you let it out.
Yeah, especially if you let it out in a very healthy way. I mean, so like, I grew up, you know, boxing. I grew up fighting. You know, and that's something I've really enjoyed doing. I loved being physically active. You know, and I noticed, you know, sidebar is, you know, in my quote unquote beginning early drinking career, however long it's lasted, if you want to put a number on it, it's something I kind of gave up. I kind of gave up my physical exercise. I kind of gave up, you know, my time. You know, my wife would encourage me that, you know, let's go to this workout facility. Let's go to that workout facility. Let's take this class. Let's take that class. And I'd do a couple, you know, feel really good, you know, but then my commitment level is never there. And I've always been a very disciplined person, but I saw that kind of, you know, traveling out the way. I never made the connection even until now. Now I'm making the connection of, you know, the depression, you know, and the kind of just negative self-talk that I would be kind of under, you know, and, you know, kind of the whole mental aspect of, you know, being under an addiction, you know, and not to say that, you know, I've always, you know, like I'd crave it, wake up in the morning. So, oh, I need this to, you know, but mm-hmm. it would still be there. It'd linger, you know, even after, you know, a night of heavy drinking, you know, 3 days later, you know, My thought process was still not necessarily 100%.
Right. So you obviously relapsed is the fancy word. You explained earlier that you made that promise. It'll never happen again, but you did. So what led up to the relapse, or was it strictly a coincidence, an accident, et cetera? They say it's never an accident, but explain.
You know, part of me, you know, so part of me would say that, yes, it was an accident, you know. I mean, but then again, you know, that would be more of my addiction side coming out, trying to justify my means and trying to justify, you know, what I did. So my relapse is simple. I celebrated because, you know, I was getting a different job. You know, I left one to get a different one, and I was feeling like I'm part of something really exciting. You know, this is something to celebrate. And I remember, you know, I drove to a liquor store and I, you know, bought some whiskey, and because, you know, that was always been kind of my drink. You know, I kind of like it. And, you know, the whole entire time I got this, there's this nagging thought in the back of my mind saying, this is a bad idea. You know, don't be doing this. You know, just, what are you thinking? You know, I mean, you know, you've had this conversation, you know, with your wife that she's not going to tolerate this, and, you know, don't do it, you know, but for some reason
And did you bring it home?
I brought it home. Yeah. I brought it home. You know, my thought process was, you know, I'm a man, I can drink this if I want, you know, it's all in my mind. I'm not gonna, you know, and I don't know why I thought that. I really honestly don't, but for some reason I just thought, you know, it's all my mind. This is all kind of made up, and maybe because I honestly wasn't believing it. You know, I mean, I went to a couple, you know, support, you know, groups, you know, things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, met with some people, and things didn't really go right, you know, so it kind of spurned me. So I was like, you know, these guys are, you know, they're way out there. They're not like me. There's complete division, and I'm fine. You know, I told myself I'm fine. Well, you know, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
So
how did that night turn out?
That night turned out horrible.
Yeah.
That night turned out very horrible. You know, it was me alone with my youngest, and, you know, I thought to myself, well, he's asleep. Mm-hmm. It's fine, you know, it's nothing really to worry about. You know, that was my, it's amazing how as I'm going to be partaking in this, I have to have this, you know, battle within my mind, battle within myself, you know, and almost like convince myself that everything's going to work out to the best.
Rationalizing.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, wife comes home, I'm three sheets to the wind, you know, and she's obviously can tell, and I think I'm being pretty cool, you know, she doesn't know, and, you know, I'm all incognito, so to speak, and the next morning, you know, we had this conversation, and she just said, I want you out, and that was a very sobering moment with me. It was like, what are you talking about? And, you know, she's obviously broken hearted, and this is the first time I've actually took the time, so to speak, to look at her. Like, the veil was lifted to actually see the harm I caused, you know, because she took me for my word. I had integrity. I had this all, and all of a sudden it's gone.
Mm-hmm. How long had you been abstinent?
About a year. About a year.
Yeah.
You know.
And so this was one, you know, sometimes it's called a slip or a relapse.
This is one slip or relapse, you know. But a lot of people, who know me and who know my story, you know, a lot of people say, well, it is one time. Or mm-hmm. they'll say, oh, she overreacted, mm-hmm. you know. And that was honestly my thought too. You know, you're overreacting, you know, don't you do this to me. This is my house, you know, this is my name on the, you know, the title and the deed, you know, not you, you know, this is my castle, so to speak. You get out, you know, those were my thoughts, you know, as negative and as bad as they are.
And those were your alcohol-induced thoughts, or those were your thoughts the next day or
not a week later, uh-huh. definitely my alcohol-induced thoughts.
Yeah.
I remember I went to my dad's house, my parents' house. My mom was out of town, and I told my dad everything that's going on. And, you know, I expected, honestly, to be treated like a child. I expected my dad to look at me and kind of shake his head and be like, damn it, Josh, you know, like, what are you thinking? What are you doing? You know, those are what I expected out of, because, you know, in all essence, that's maybe what I wanted. I wanted to feel that because... You know, I'm already feeling guilty and bad. Mm-hmm.
You wanted to be scolded, perhaps.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and he just came with me with love and care. Yeah. And it was, you know, it's okay. You can stay with me, you know, and we'll take care of this, you know. And mm-hmm. what are you going to do now? You know, you got to pick yourself up. What are you going to do now? You know,
right.
You know, there's a saying in prize fighting, you know, you've been knocked down. You know, getting up is up to you, you know. And anybody that's ever been any, you know, MMA or your boxing or anything like that, you know, getting hit in the face, getting hit pretty hard, you know, it's not the best feeling, you know, but you still want to win, so you got to get up. And you're not your coach, not anybody else is going to help you up. You have to do it yourself. So I looked at this as getting knocked down pretty hard in the ring. So I'm flat on the canvas, and my trust bucket, I kicked to the curb with my wife. I don't have any of that with her. You know, all the things that I love the most are being taken away from me, and so it's like a nightmare is starting to unfold all of my doing. And the person who I turn to is my dad, who, like I said, we grew up in a loving home, you know, and I'm expecting to be yelled at, you know, for not being a man, for not doing what is right, but yet to be hit with, you know, just love and open arms and caring, to me was very astonishing, just a God-given thing.
Yeah. Now, is that when you enter treatment or shortly after?
That was actually right before.
I see, yeah.
So when I was, the first time that I kind of had a incident, so to speak, that kind of led up to this. I actually met some people through a support group, and there's a guy that I met, and he kind of took me under his wing and, you know, told me his story about, you know, his life. And I was really impressed by him, you know, older gentleman, you know, like 58, 60 some years old, you know, fit that stereotype, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he gave me his number, you know, and just said, text me if you ever need anything, you know. And I met another guy who just said, you know, text me if you ever need anything, give me a call if you ever need anything, you know. So these are people out there that care for you, people that are complete strangers to me, and I don't really open up to individuals. So I text one buddy, and I remember that text, and it exactly said, you know, the day you warned me of has come. Because when I stopped going to the support group, he warned me and said, you know, something like this might happen. Might not happen to everybody, but it might happen to you. And he wouldn't be doing his due diligence, you know, to be looking out for me mm-hmm. if, you know, he didn't send me this message. I took that message as kind of like well, who are you, buddy? You know, who are you to tell me this? You know, I'm better than this. I have this thing big.
Sure.
You know, there's, well, I text these people, and part of me is feeling kind of a lot of humility, you know, and just kind of shame for you. And there again, nothing but love of, all right, you need to call a treatment program. What do you need to do? And that's, you know, going to be the best thing for you and your family. That's what you got to do. So, and I remember, looking on my phone, my little smartphone, and looking at the number and dialing at my phone, and like, do I hit send? Do I not? Do I hit send? Do I not? You know, like, and I'm trying to think, how do I get myself out of this?
Sure.
Well, I hit the button for send, you know, and I called someone, and they said, ironically, well, maybe to my benefit, they said, well, we're actually closed right now. We can come meet you on Monday. Well, this is like, Saturday morning. And so I called this other gentleman back and said, hey, I did what you wanted me to do. I called. They can't see me, so I guess I don't have to go. And his exact words for me is, That's a bunch of bull. You get your butt up out of that bed. You stop your crying. You be a man. You go in there. And I kind of needed those words, you know, and it's kind of those words of affirmation of you take care of this. Mm-hmm. So I call again and talk to someone else, and they said, yeah, come on in. So I came in and I met, sat down. We had a conversation, you know, what led me up to here, you know, what I'm going to do. And then my next day I had a meeting with some counselors and, you know, went through an evaluation, you know, and the whole entire time, part of me was like, do I really even need this? I mean, and again, this is another isolated incident. Well, this is obviously not an isolated incident because this is two incidents. So if it's isolated, it's only one.
Right.
But I'm trying to, again, talk myself out of this and say, I don't know. I just don't need this, you know. And well, I'm glad that the people that I met with, the counselors that I met with, you know, were very, very understanding, mm-hmm. very open.
Right.
And they let me talk and kind of were jotting some stuff down. And I was a little intimidated because every time I'd say something, they'd write something down, you know. They asked me another question, they'd write something down, you know, and I'm kind of like, well, how about I start writing things about you, you know, and, you know.
Now, did you end up in going to day treatment or evening treatment?
I actually did an evening
treatment. I see. Treatment, and I think that, I thought that's what I remembered. And so, and we call it IOP, intensive outpatient,
yep.
Evening. And that gives people like yourself, career people, you know,
yep.
a chance to work during the day and go to treatment in the evening. We're running out of time, and yep. I want to find out. So what? How are you with your wife and your children now?
After going to outpatient and spending time there and coming back, you know, my wife and I are probably actually closer than we have ever been. One of my favorite things we do, we haven't actually done the last two Sundays, but every Sunday night we get together and we just have a conversation. Just her and I talk. Kids are asleep. We talk. You know, we talk about finances. We talk about anything and everything that we have going on for the week. We talk about, you know, the ups and downs, you know, and she actually started, you know, kind of, you know, talked to me more as an individual, you know, not just someone who barks out orders, but someone that says, you know, I care about you and I also care about what you say and your thoughts, you know, and there's a lot of different dynamics to every marriage, you know, and, you know, mine has always been the fact that I've married an insanely beautiful woman who I still at this point can't figure out why she married mm-hmm. me. But like I tell everybody, I married up. I mean, that's what I did. I married up. Yeah. But, you know, it's through this terrible valley I had to go through, you know, the coming back up, you know, is not to say that I'm ever going to want to, you know, stay on the peak, you know, because I know, you know, the ebb and flow of life, you know, creates, you know, more valleys and peaks in mm-hmm. the future. But right now, the fact that we're spending time to get to know each other more is perfect.
But I've got your back. I can say with some objectivity, you're a handsome guy. You look physically fit. I mean, well, you're so, I've got your back, okay?
Appreciate that, Tom. Appreciate that.
So with the, if anyone's listening right now and they might think they have an addiction problem with alcohol or other drugs, what's your best advice to them?
My best advice is if that ever pops in your mind, you know, listen to it. Mm-hmm. Just listen to that. I mean, if you ever think to yourself, I might have a problem or, you know, life's getting a little bit unmanageable, you know, and you're trying to maybe figure out what's going on, listen to that. Mm-hmm. You know, if I would have listened to that, you know, when I was in college, maybe none of this would have ever happened.
Right. I like what you said. I like that advice. And I like what you said earlier, and that is be a man and do something about it.
Absolutely.
You know, deal with it. So we usually close the program with the Serenity Prayer, if that's okay with you. And thank you again, Josh, for being on the program. Josh Barros has been our guest, and he's from Bismarck. And thanks again. So God grant me the serenity. To accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.